Florida International University and infectious disease specialist, Dr. Eileen Marty. Dr. Marty, good morning. Let's talk first about the FDA greenlighting the first blood test to help diagnose Alzheimer's disease. Is this something that is going to happen this year? Is it going to be that soon?
Yeah, it can happen this year. We still have enough time in the year for it to become effective. And the data is phenomenal. Compared to previous ways of trying to diagnose Alzheimer's, it's less invasive and much more specific and very useful. So like the oldest methods, we're using radiological types of studies like an MRI or a PET scan. Those are very nonspecific and they're very late when not early when you're first starting to develop Alzheimer's symptoms. Another set of studies, and you and I have talked about this, is using the fluid from the cerebral spinal area, doing a spinal tap and taking out that cerebral spinal fluid and looking for some of the exact same things that are looked at in this new luminescent test. But again, that's much more invasive. And it's done sort of piecemeal, looking at each thing individually, like the tau proteins and the beta amyloid. Whereas this new test, first of all, it's blood, which is a lot less scary than having your CSF taken, right? Your cerebral spinal fluid taken, number one. And number two, it's looking, it uses these little antibodies to detect the various components like the phosphorylated tau protein and the beta amyloid at the same time and creates that ratio that we find so helpful in diagnosing very early Alzheimer's problems. So I think it's great and it will be available soon.
So this is for adults 55 and older who are showing symptoms. Is that correct?
Right now, but eventually it can become a screening test. And could be used even earlier, sure.
There was a story in the news last week I want to ask you about. A laboratory in New Mexico is racing to find out what effects accumulated microplastics have on the human body. Have you delved into the research on this?
Yeah, quite a bit. It's a little scary if you think about it because it's so pervasive how we use plastics. You know, plastics, there are semi-synthetic plastics that were actually developed back in the late 1800s, and then there are fully synthetic plastics that were developed about 1907. So these have been around now for a long time. And one of the complications with these studies is finding grains to look at that have not been affected by plastics, right? But what we know scientifically is that the chemicals that make up these molecules, these plastics, which are these diverse polymers, they can interact with living cells. And that means human cells, animal cells, and plant cells. And we know that they can interfere with, remember how we've talked about how cells are little chatterboxes and constantly communicating with each other?
Mm-hmm.
They can interfere with that communication, which in turn can trigger the types of damage and phosphorylation that we're seeing in tau proteins that we just talked about a few minutes ago as being one of the key things that we detect when people have Alzheimer's. They also can disrupt metabolic pathways like glycolysis and how your little mitochondria work. They can change how they can activate something called an inflammasome, which cells do in a very these are special multi molecular structures that can lead to the formation of pores in your cells and the release of certain very pro-inflammatory signaling molecules. So the cells can explode and create all kinds of inflammation, and you don't want that in your brain. So the oxidative stress, the inflammasome formation, the metabolic pathways being interrupted, these plastics potentially will cause significant damage. And so I think what we need to think about is how we can decrease our exposure to these.
So should we be worried about bottled water? We think we're being healthy because we're not using tap water, and we buy water in these plastic bottles, and it sometimes sits around a while. Is that harmful?
Well, we're trying to figure that out. I mean, right now, it's a matter of what is that what is the plastic that is in the plastic bottle that you're consuming? Because not all plastic bottles are the same, right? We know that some plastics are worse than others, like polystyrene happens to be particularly bad. Polyvinyl chloride is particularly bad, right? Polycarbonate, that's also really bad. That's the one that's been known, we've talked about before, that can disrupt endocrine functions, right? Those are bad. So you got to know what your bottle is made of. Obviously, a glass bottle is safer, but then on the other hand, it can break and shatter and cause other problems. But in terms of your brain function, a glass bottle would be a safer bottle to use if you're going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm. I feel good because the root beer I bought last night, glass bottles. I'm trying to tell my wife it's healthy that way. I'll quote you.
But Bob, you can filter your water, the water that you get from the city, mm-hmm. and put that into your own non-plastic containers, and then you're helping yourself and the environment all at the same time. By the way, people ought to vacuum out, and don't wear shoes indoors because people track microplastics in their shoes. So there's little things people can do. Yeah.
All right, adding microplastics to the list of things to worry about today. Thank you, Dr. Eileen Marty. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. Thank you very much.
Take care.